Reform Voices of Torah, Union for Reform Judaism, Shabbat, April 11, 2015, 22 Nisan, 5775, Shmini 1, Leviticus 9:1 through 10:11, Haftarah, 2 Samuel 6:1 through 23, Devar Torah, When the Offerer Becomes the Offering, by Richard N. Levy. While Pesach is now behind us, a fifth question arises as we look at the Torah portion for this week. Why is this week different from all other weeks? On all other weeks, we read one parasha, one Torah portion, each week. On this week, we read only half the portion, postponing the second half to the following week. Why do we do this? It is one of the rare examples where the lectionary, the cycle of Torah readings in the Reform movement, differs from that of the rest of the Jewish world. In the rest of the diaspora, festivals are observed for 2 days, stemming from the time before the calendar was fixed. So the Shabbat of April 10th through 11th is considered to be the 8th day of Passover, that is, the second day of the conclusion of the festival, on which a special Torah portion is read. But because the calendar has been fixed for millennia, the Reform movement has never observed the second day of festivals. So for us, April 10th through 11th is a regular Shabbat when we continue the cycle of Torah readings with Shmini, Leviticus 9:1 through 11:47. The problem is that if on the following week we were to read the next portion, Tazria Mitzorah, we would be completely out of sync with the rest of the Jewish world, which would be reading Shmini. Striving to balance Reform festival practice with our simultaneous commitment to Klal Yisrael, the whole community of Israel, the movement decided to split the Shmini portion into two, reading Shmini 1 on April 10th through 11th, when the rest of the Jewish world reads the 8th day of Pesach portion, and Shmini 2 on the other half, on April 17th through 18th, joining the rest of the Jewish world in the same Torah reading. What does the portion say? Before the reading last Shabbat on the first day of Pesach interrupted our story of the consecration of Aaron as high priests and his sons as priests, we had left them all sitting at the entrance to the tent of meeting for 7 days, filling themselves with the sanctified bread and meat they had prepared. This week, our portion begins, Vayehi b'yom hashmini, on the 8th day, hence the title. The 8th day is significant. It is the day after the 7th day, when the world was completed, and thus the first day of a new world, a new creation. The 8th day suggests that Aaron and his sons have been recreated, reborn, into a new identity, as they have internalized the holiness of both the entrance to the place where God's presence was to be encountered and the offerings they had eaten there. On this auspicious day, God commands Aaron to take a calf for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering in Leviticus 9:2. Rashi, and the Sifra Midrash he quotes, is struck by the choice of a calf, suggesting it signified that God was ready to pardon him for his and the people's sin with a golden calf, another aspect of his rebirth. Aaron, assisted by his sons, makes the initial offering of his priesthood. Aaron and Moses go forth and bless the people, and as evidence that the new high priest has done his work correctly, the kavod, glory of Adonai, appears to all the people, just as Moses had prophesied earlier in Leviticus 9:6, and a fire goes forth from before God and consumes the altar and its offerings. In Leviticus 9:24, the consecration of the Kohanim, priests, is complete. Or is it? The fire that came forth from God seems to have intrigued 2 of Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, in Leviticus 10:1, and they themselves each took a fire pan, put fire and incense in it, and offered Esh Zarah, strange or alien fire, which God had not commanded them. At that point, fire came forth from heaven and consumed them, in Leviticus 10:2, a parallel to Leviticus 9:24. What had they done wrong? What was this alien fire? Why, so soon after they had been consecrated, did God take their lives? Rashi, again citing the Sifra, argues that the two young priests performed the ritual correctly, but had not done so as a mitzvah, a commandment. That is, they had not consulted Moses to see whether it was God's intent that they offer the fire. Ibn Ezra agrees. If these two commentators are correct, it is a reminder that the way the priests and we today serve the God of Israel is not only by executing the proper sacrifices or by proper prayers, but also by our intention to fulfill a command of God. Others commenting on 10:1 suggest that the priests erred in the way that they offered the incense and the fire, or that they made their offering too close to the Holy of Holies, or that they had been drinking. And then God responds opaquely, "Bikrovai ekadesh ve'al pnei chol ha'am ekaved," meaning, "Through those who are close to me, I will be sanctified, or my holiness will become manifest, and in the face of all the people, my glory," related to kavod, "will appear," or perhaps, "through those who come close to me, I will be sanctified." See Leviticus 10:3. As we have seen, the word karov, the root of the word meaning to make an offering, also means to be close. Is God saying that the deaths of these close priests who came close through their offering made God's holiness manifest to the people? Had the offerers become the offering? We have noted that human sacrifice, as much as a few pious people may yearn to make it, is forbidden. Did God turn the two priests' mistaken offering into the ultimate offering? Were their lives given that the other priests and the people might survive? And was their death the real climax of the priests' consecration? More questions, not to be definitively answered, but to be pondered in studying this troubling portion. "And Aaron was silent," the story continues in Leviticus 10:3. Before the roaring blaze of this all-consuming fire, so are we. Rabbi Richard N. Levy, recently retired as Rabbi of the Synagogue and Director of Spiritual Growth at the Los Angeles campus of HUCJIR, where he continues to teach in the fields of liturgy, spiritual growth, and social justice. He is a past director of the School of Rabbinic Studies at the campus and a past president of the Central Conference of American Rabbis.